Comedian Robert Klein.
Stop acting like you're Ed Sullivan.
Is that my cue?
That's your cue.
Hi.
Hi, Robert.
Stan has gotten stuck watching, a lot of classic TV shows, and he's starting to incorporate the Sullivan style into all his intros.
I got to ask you, and this was one of the first questions out of the box I wanted to ask you, which was more nerve-wracking for you, your first time on Ed Sullivan or your first time on The Tonight Show?
They were both very nerve-wracking, but Ed Sullivan was a little scarier the whole show because it was... Well, they both may as well been live because the Carson show didn't sweeten or do anything over. But Sullivan would be prompted between acts by his son-in-law, Bob Precht, who was the producer.
Yep.
And people would be watching him. And they wouldn't be paying attention to you. And most of them in the upper balcony. It's where Letterman's show is now, but before it was modified. They couldn't see you. And then the most nerve-wracking thing of all is the producer told me, look, if Ed calls you over, which is good, after your spot, he will have a tendency to face you the wrong way. Don't let him. I thought to myself, the guy's doing the show 30 years. So, sure enough, when he pulls me over, he's trying to pull me to this side, and I pull back the other way. I look like one of those mechanical hockey players in a penny arcade, back and forth on a swivel. That was very nerve-wracking, not to mention various performing animals nipping at your heels and the wings. I mean, European ballerinas doing their bar backstage. It was true vaudeville. And while I stopped watching it at a certain age as a kid, I admired it later on because it was pure vaudeville. I mean, there was nothing sweet and nothing that you went out there raw. And it was interesting in that way.
Well, they're showing a lot of you now and your Sullivan stuff on TV Land. You got to be on probably every 2.5 weeks they've got a Robert Klein, Ed Sullivan thing because they run the half-hour excerpts
somebody
of the show.
Somebody sent me them, and they were appalling. I mean, I looked appalling.
Well, that hair.
Somebody should have clued me in about the mutton chops and the space between my teeth.
But I always used to get a kick when he would introduce you. Watching this, he'd call you the former school teacher.
Yes, from the Bronx. I mean, he was half out of it already. I mean, what this guy did, I still can't figure out in any way, shape, or form. That Tonight Show, that was really the most important. And I was very nervous, but I was in control. But they tried to protect what I did because what I did then was so unusual. It's not so now. Everybody does that kind of narrative thing, a little more realistic than just the jokes and all. But it was, and they decided they had to protect it, and I should actually, in my first shot, sit on the panel first, have the audience get to meet me for a couple of minutes, and then stand up. Well, that was disastrous. I mean, sitting down. There was not much going on. As soon as I stood up and I killed him, that made everything right, and then forever we did it in reverse. But the thing is that Carson was always there. When you did your job and you did a good job, he and the band gave you good laughs, even if the audience wasn't right quite up to it. So I always admired him for that. He genuinely... I don't know what it would have been like to have been married to him and all that.
Number five.
Yes. Johnny had his various things. But as far as a young man, at one time young, doing what he's supposed to do, he would really sit there and laugh and admire. In all honesty, Letterman is a nice glaze in his eye of boredom. And,
you're being brutally honest there.
With a tad of fear, since Jay Leno has made him work so hard, that poor fellow. I mean, Letterman would like nothing better than just to work and then forget about it later, but he's thrust into this thing. I admire both he and Jay very much. Letterman came to our management office. My managers really discovered him, Rollins and Joffe and Buddy Mora. And Leno, who always claimed he was somewhat influenced by me. I mean, he was prepping cars at Commonwealth Avenue in Boston at Foreign Motors, where I bought a Mercedes in 1970. We figured out he probably did the windshield.
Was he a good detail man?
That's right. Was he
a good detail man? I mean, he got the job done?
Well, the car came beautifully. I didn't know who he was or that. He had no idea of becoming a comedian. Years later, at the Improv in New York, we discerned that it was true. What I was going to say is, though, the fun is out of it. They're both in a high-stakes game which Leno is relishes because that's...
Well, because he's playing the game.
Well, he loves his work so much. You know, he never stops traveling. You know, and the other guy could really do without, but he has to be in it. You know. So those things that once in a while I do them now. I used to do them right. much more often.
I know you do, but tell me if I'm right or wrong on this with Letterman and like Mark was just saying here. Jay Leno plays the game. He courts the affiliates. He does all the... I think Letterman, it's almost therapeutic for him to do the show because it gives him that outlet. And then he wants to be done with it because I tend to think his life is miserable all the way around.
Well, he's one of those, you know, people that... furthers the tradition about slightly depressive people as comedians and also smashes the one about being Jewish and neurotic. he is, you know, he's got his private life. The guy has got, you know, like such an amazingly large career. I mean, he's quoted constantly and all that. They have a stable of, you know, 12 or 13 Harvard boys, and they change them all the time, and they fire producers once in a while. It's kind of cutthroat, and I feel a little bit badly for him in that the stakes are costing him. He normally would not be as aggressive, and he is, you're quite right. Leno will visit and shake. And,
yeah.
You know, I wrote him a note about something personally, and he was on the phone the next day. I mean, we've never been that bosom. I'm not a caller and all that. Jay takes care of business. Again, you know, the odd thing is I never watched any of their shows. I never watched Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, except when I was on it most of the time.
Would you do that, too, when you got home that night, throw it on and watch it every time?
I would definitely try to tape it and watch it. It's gotten to the point now where I really forget sometimes to watch it. And I do have copies of pretty much everything, but it got to be more ordinary. But, you know, the thing is that show business is much maligned unfairly. It's a wonderful business. I have always been quite attached to it. I think it has great dignity. But when the meter is off, enough already, that's my feeling. And the last thing in the world I want to do is watch talk shows and stuff. Give me either a stupid ball game.
There you go.
Know, or... like
midget wrestling.
Like midget wrestling.
Midget wrestling, sure.
And give me the Learning Channel, all the rest. I go for them. But I, you know, I'm just not into it because it makes me feel like, oh, I need that part and all this. And incidentally, one more quick thing. I know I'm talking up a storm here.
Oh, go ahead.
I did a couple of book reviews in the New York Times when George Burns, maybe 2 months before he died, he was approaching 100. And here was this vision of a guy in a wheelchair pissed off at 100, because he has to blow the gig at the in London at the Palladium, and
right?
And Albert Brooks once told me that when Jack Benny was ill, and he didn't even know how ill, but he was dying, but he didn't even know it. But he was mad about something at 82 about this gig or that gig that he didn't get or whatever. And I don't want to be like that. I love to keep working and never completely retire. Give me a mic. Rodney used to say, I'll tell you, you know. You can always make a living in variety, you know, a mic, a lights, that's it, you know. I never want to completely retire, but, man, I don't want to be, you know, huffing and puffing about not having this part or that mm-hmm. part. So you have to, it's so ubiquitous. It's everywhere you turn, show business, you know. I mean, and it's a wonderful business, but I have quite enough of it in my work, you know.
Well, Robert, let me ask you this. You've done Sullivan.
What are we plugging
Carson.
Here, by the way, aren't we?
I don't know what we're plugging. I'm looking down your stuff. You've got your comedy records out
no,
on
but
right
where
now.
Are you in Miami? Where are we talking?
Fort Myers, Florida.
You're in Fort Myers.
Fort Myers, Naples. Ever been here?
Which coast? You're on the East Coast.
No, we're on the West Coast, Robert.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Right across Alligator Alley from Miami.
Oh.
You know,
oh.
It's a nice buffer.
They got Sanibel Island out here, Captiva.
You know what? I think I did a show there once. Is Marco Island anywhere?
Oh, yeah, right there.
Okay. Well, I did a show once for HBO at Marco Island for, you know, some of the affiliates. So I have been in. Oh, of course. And my ex-wife sang in the in St. Petersburg. That's when my dog, I had a big German shepherd with a Jewish name named Moshe Pipik, because he looked like a Nazi, and I wanted to kind of neutralize it. He was the sweetest animal. He was adopted, and he was a big, fearsome-looking animal, but the gentlest creature. And was quite devoted to my wife, and she was singing Carmen. And they're rehearsing at St. Petersburg Opera down there, and she tied him to the piano. Actually, he was the good boy, but just so he won't walk away or anything. In the fourth act, the tenor has to kill Carmen with a knife.
Oh,
this poor dude with a very, very bad hairpiece. It's like, Carmen! Carmen! He takes the knife. My dog goes after him, dragging a grand piano.
Oh, no.
So I have certainly been to the west coast of Florida, my friend. We almost saw carnage there. If anybody is, how accessible is Fort Lauderdale to your 2 hours, right?
Yeah, about 2 hours.
Because we're doing a date at Gilda's Club. David Brenner and I, these clubs that have poked up are all around the country for Gilda Radner in memory of Gilda.
Yeah, right.
You know, people are being treated for cancer and all that. She was, she also tried humor as therapy. She was too awfully sick, unfortunately. But anyway, we're going to be in that area. David Brenner and I are splitting the bill later in the
month. What's he been doing?
He's got a nice little boy. He's got a second child. He's got David and I were never that close, but I have a lot of respect for him. He fathered a son with a woman who he only casually knew, and she turned out to be unfit and all that. And he fought for years, and he has a nice son. And
good.
And now he has a new baby with a new wife. And
now, did he check this wife out?
Yeah, did he check her out?
I think he did. Yeah, she's a charming woman, and he's a grown guy. He does some dates too. We've done a few together, and then we answer questions at the end. Mm-hmm. And he's got an interest in a pool room in New York, a very elegant pool parlor, and so
he's doing okay for himself.
Doing fine.
All right. So Fort Lauderdale, do you know the dates of when you're going to be over there?
You know, I'm embarrassed now because I wasn't sure which date this was we were talking about. It's near the end of the month.
Okay.
You know, this is like mortifying.
Right. People keep their eyes open. They'll spot it.
Yeah. We're making an appearance at the. It's a theater in Palm Beach.
Yeah, you're not doing the Gleason Theater or anything, are you?
No.
Burt Reynolds' place there?
No.
Or Blue?
Yeah. Oh, I always liked Burt. I did Hooper with him. I had a great time with him.
Now, there's a bad toupe. Come on.
Well, yeah.
He's got like 4 or 5 bad ones.
Yes.
A guy like you, Robert, should go up as a friend and tell him, hey, dump the toupe like you did in Deliverance.
No, Marv Albert, I want to do that.
No, that's real bad.
The whole Albert family.
No, I mean, actually, do they all have them?
I'll tell you right now, Steve Albert just went to a toupe. If you look at some of the old pay-per-view fights that he did, and the wind was blowing, you saw a lot of the scalp. And then suddenly, one next pay-per-view fight, it's sitting up there like some kind of animal.
Yeah, I think that's a mistake because, you know, he's at the sidelines of all the Knicks games doing them, and he could get smashed into by Charles Oakley, and he could go one way and his hair could go the other.
Exactly.
The career would be over. I'm going with my Friar Tuck baldness.
Well, you're balding, and I'll tell you right now, you're aging very naturally, very well. I look at the old Ed Sullivan stuff. You're aging extremely well.
I look pretty good on Sisters. Remember, I played Fousey Kurtz's husband on Sisters.
Yes, yep.
I'm 55, but some plastic surgeon here in Westchester wants a dermatologist wants to transplant my hair like farming. He said it's just like farming. Take the hair from the back, put it on the top, and my own hair will grow there forever. Farming,
like
$10,000. Now, it's just like farming. Now, the government will pay me $15,000 not to grow hair there. And I can even make a better stipend if I alternate crops, hair carrots, hair Brussels sprouts. You know what I mean? Go back and forth from hair. I'm thinking of these. You know, people, old makeup
don't
people.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Old makeup people I know from New York that have been doing me since I'm a baby in this town. You know, hey, Robert, you need an eye job. You know, it's nice to hear. there's only so much I'll do, you know, but I haven't done anything so far. What I am doing is working with a trainer 3 times a week because I'm 55 and I have a 13-year-old kid, and he keeps me in control. That's what
God
I do most
you.
Of in life. You know?
Let me throw a Larry King question out there.
Yeah.
Robert, why the harmonica?
Very good. Very good Larry thing. I did a charity for him not long ago, a heart thing. You know, and one person gets a heart transplant. I figured all these millions, and one person every year. You know.
Yeah.
And they smack him around a couple of times before he gets it, like an initiation. I love the harmonica.
You're good at it.
Thank you. I don't think I've ever improved, but long ago I worked with Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee in Greenwich Village.
You're kidding me.
Bitter End. And you remember them?
Yeah. Haney's a blues
Terry's
guy, man.
The
they're both gone now, but they hated each other, incidentally. One old black man from Oakland who played the guitar, lame. The other one, an old black man, blind, from East Coast, I think, or Cleveland, who played the harmonica, Sonny. And they call each other River. I'm backstage, you know, they go, what you want, River? And they're kind of annoyed with each other. You know, what, River? Adam said, what you, River? What you talking about, River? So I said, Sonny, Brownie, tell me, I said, why do you call each other River? And Brownie goes, because it goes on and on. This agent, Harold Rosenberg or something, told me that to get them together was like a major thing. They hated each other. Anyway, they made wonderful music, and he taught me some licks. And through the years, I always just would pick up things as I hear them. It's sort of an unorthodox style, but unfortunately, I really can't do much more than...
Is it something you do in your private life to relax, or you just pick it up and mess around?
I love good harp playing. I do. I mean, I really respect Larry Adler, who can play Bach and Gershwin, and Toots Thielman, who, you know, does these wonderful session dates. When you hear a great harmonica in some commercial, it's probably Toots, who commutes between Belgium and New York. You know, I'm a jack of many trades, but harmonica playing, I'm not a master, but I have a good feel for blues music, and I always liked incorporating it. And of course, my theme song, "I Can't Stop My Leg,"
right?
Came
yeah,
from that, yeah. And I'm working on my 7th HBO show.
I wanted to touch base with you on that. You've had a relationship with HBO for a long time.
Yes, HBO. I was the first one they ever did in 1975. They had a couple of 100,000 subscribers, and now, between that and Cinemax, they have about 23 million. And it's, you know, changed over the years, and thank goodness.
I can't stop my leg.
I will never stop it.
Laughing as hard as I've ever laughed in my life when you go, my leg, stop!
Yeah, and I incorporate, in one way or another, there's a version of it in every show. And, you know, there was a while between my show in 86 and my one in 95. My marriage broke up. I had a whole bunch of stuff to straighten out. I began to do a lot more acting. I did a Broadway. I had a nice
yeah,
hit.
Broadway.
Sisters,
yeah.
And then the sisters gig. Now, I never stopped doing in-person appearances in terms of private ones for doctors and brokerages and banks.
People yeah, with money.
Which I love. You know, those are lucrative. You don't have to sell a ticket, and they're great. But, did I have the stuff to write a whole new repertoire and all that, because they used up a lot of my material, obviously, in 5 shows before that, and then 2 of them were 90 minutes. Any case, I did that 6th show, and I was nominated for some ACE Awards for the writing, and it was really a good show. I was very proud of it. So I'm working on the 7th now. I'm working on new stuff.
What's the process of that? Do you let things come to you, or do you have to sit down and say discipline, and I'm going
to
do it?
I have to work. The important thing is to get up on stage. And the way I like to write the material is to go to the smaller places. You have a club in that town there?
Yeah, there's a few around here.
Yeah? What's the biggest comedy club there?
Well,
are we on the radio now? This is like a private conversation.
That's the way we do it here.
What I do is I go back to the roots, the little cabaret setting. It's intimate, and it's the way to go on that. Plus, every date I do, I mean, I think of something. I always improvise something or other. And basically, my material is written initially by improvising it and then refining it. That's the way I was taught at Second City. Yes, I do sit and pre-write some ideas. I get ideas and write them down. There's a whole other kind of writing, which I'm less experienced in, and that is, like, you know, writing for the New York Times, which I do once in a while, write an article. See, I like my laughs right away. You guys on the radio, and people who face a word processor,
yeah, it's different.
You can't
totally
get it
different.
Right away.
See, now, I'd be afraid to do something like you do, because that whole immediate response back, boy, if you bomb, you bomb, and you know it right then and there.
Yeah,
you can go and do something on the radio, bomb on one thing, and then come back and
no,
you win them
that,
back.
That's what...
yeah. Well, partnerships are also good. When you know someone's rhythms and you can pick up on each other, that helps, because you have to do it for an extended period, your periods on the radio. But you know something? It is a strange thing. It is nothing more painful to watch than a comedian failing. Because you're begging the laughter. You're there for one reason. And, you know, early in my career, there would be those times when things would backfire or surprise me. And now it simply doesn't happen. Once in a while, you know, like some elitist thing for very rich people. And
but, Robert, they know what they're getting when you come on stage.
That's true.
This
I remember I used to say to Rodney years ago, my mentor, you know, man, it's tough and I don't know you. He says, yeah, wait till you have to draw, man. Wait till it's your name out there. you know. There are advantages to both. But, you know, years ago, Albert Brooks had a funny routine. Jimmy. He was opening for Jimi Hendrix or something.
He's brilliant, by the way.
Oh, he is brilliant. He certainly is. Yeah. He was a good stand-up, too, but he hated it. He really hated it. Like Woody hated it, and Steve Martin didn't like it much either. So there were a bunch of guys who really did that very well, but didn't like it. Where a guy like Seinfeld, he never wanted to stop it. And I wouldn't. You know, I'd love to keep doing it, too, and do other things. I've always done other things as well, but, you know, keep on doing it.
All right, Robert, hey, our time is up.
Listen, my boys, this was very pleasant. We ought to do this at least once a month. It's therapeutic.
Thank you so much.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Bye-bye.
Bye.